Welcome to Burning River Radio. And I'm joined today for something new by Justin Latta. You can follow me, of course, at Burning River. You can follow me on Twitter at Burning River BB and Justin at JL_baseball. You know, we record these on Sunday nights, and at some point, this is just going to become an After the Thrones show where we just talk about Game of Thrones instead of.
You'll be talking to yourself because I don't watch Game of Thrones, so.
I talk to all the people. I talk to many, many people who listen to this.
Well, you can talk to them about Game of Thrones, and I'll just sit here and listen and not care. So carry on.
I really want to know what I have to say.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so week, because everyone was about to jump off a cliff in a row against Boston. And then they won two in a row against New York, and it was like, oh, wait, they're great again. Lost two in a row against New York, and I haven't seen quite the level of depression and anxiety that there was against Boston. Honestly, I haven't seen any of it. When it really comes down to it, for some reason you gave shit about this the other day, maybe it was even today, when you said something like, oh, so we're just supposed to treat it as if it's game one game out of 162. And I said, yes, they all are. They're further ahead of the Royals now than they were before this.
Yeah.
Before they lost the two to the Red Sox, they're better off in the division than they were then. So I'm still not worried about the Central Division race. And I'm not going to worry about any individual game against any individual opponent. I think overall, obviously you're playing to win every single game. But I think you said something, it's mostly a bullpen usage thing as far as strategy goes. But bullpen usage is so different in the regular season, the playoffs. And you wanted them to bring in Allen early in both the two losses to the Yankees. And I just didn't see a reason to burn your really only dependable reliever at this point. When it's not, I'm not saying save him for a save situation. I'm just saying don't blow him unless you know you're going to win the game if he pitches a perfect inning.
The reason I got mad about that, and I'm still mad, is because Francona said, I forget if it was before the Yankee series or whenever they finally placed Miller on the DL, Francona said to reporters before a game that he would use Allen in the Miller type role. Maybe not all the time, but he would. And I'm not saying you have to treat it like a playoff game, you know, in the eighth inning against the Yankees on Saturday, it's a 1-1 game. You don't need him to pitch eighth and the ninth. You just get him out in the eighth and keep it a tight game. No one's saying you have to go on and use him like Andrew Miller and make him throw two innings and burn, like you said, burn out your only reliable reliever. But that was a spot where Allen should have been in because the Indians essentially lost that game using, depending on how you feel about the bullpen at any given moment, maybe your third best reliever, maybe fourth. The Miller role, why not do it right there? It's not like
Okay, but McAllister pitched and gave up a home run. Let's say Allen pitched a perfect eighth. Then you're using McAllister in the ninth. You have to go two innings. You can't just you can't just throw one shot an inning and you win the game. That's why I can't, like, if they had the lead, then I'd say go with Allen for two innings even.
But you have to get it to the ninth inning in a tie game. You can't just hope that you get it to the ninth inning.
You still have to pitch a scoreless ninth inning after you pitch a scoreless eighth inning. So I'm saying that they would have had to use McAllister at some point if that was their next guy in line or Goody.
Yes,
or
they would have. But he also wouldn't have faced the top of the order.
Okay, so you're just talking about a sequencing thing.
Yeah, he faced Gardner, Judge and or Gardner, Headley, and Judge. Or so you have Allen against those guys who maybe has a better shot. I don't know. I mean, when McAllister came in, my first thought was, oh God, here comes a straight fastball. It's gonna be a home run for Aaron Judge. I didn't see McAllister hanging a curveball and giving up a go-ahead home run to Chase Headley, of all things. So, I mean, if that's how it was going to happen, it was always going to happen that way. But I don't know. I would have rather lived with using your best reliever, trying to get the game to the ninth inning, still tied, or the bottom of the eighth inning, for that matter.
Yeah, and to me, it's just not worth – it's not that big of a deal. But that specific game. The fact that they scored one run, again, is troubling. That they can't – they either score 15 or they score one. And it's really every single time out. And I did end up looking – doing some more research into it, and I couldn't figure anything out. Of course, it's very possible it's still just a random variance thing. And I think that was probably the best part of Keith Law's book, Smart Baseball – is he really went into random variance and showing, like, in a season where it seems like something is real when it isn't. And I think the Indians' home record is the perfect indication of that. Early in the season, that's all they wanted to talk about on the broadcast was how the Indians sucked at home, and they were great on the road, and they couldn't win at home, and they were the only team with a losing record at home, whatever. And then they won 9 in a row at home. You don't necessarily expect it to bounce back that quickly, but the fact is, home, you should win more games at home, and you should play better at home than you do on the road, slightly. It's not,
in theory, yes.
Over the history of baseball, home teams have won, I think it's like 52% of the games. So there's like a 2% swing, where if you're the home team, you have a better chance of winning. And every year, if you look through, like, the home team wins most of the games. So there should be a slight home field advantage. But, like, you should be pretty much the same team on the road and at home. So if your team is playing poorly at one or the other, or you have a pitcher who somebody had, like, some crazy stat about Carlos Carrasco pitching at home in the road, whatever. And if some ERAs seem out of whack with the splits, it's probably just random variance. It really isn't a real thing, with the exception of if you pitch in Fenway or Yankee Stadium or Colorado or someplace where there's a really quirk to the stadium and it makes it either easier or more difficult to pitch there. But Progressive Field has played pretty true over its history. So it's been pretty close to even when they measure it as a hitter's park or a pitcher's park. Most years it seems pretty close to even. I think over the long term, things are going to even out, and hopefully this run scoring thing will even out. The whole we're going to score 15 runs or score 2 runs, you know, that. And if that evens out, then we don't even need to have these discussions. They'd be winning by 6 instead of.
Yeah, we don't. But yeah, they need to score more and run. I mean, it's a team game. It loses the team. But I mean, the only time you can really point anything is if the offense scores, you know, 6 runs, and it's a 6-1 lead, and your bullpen gives up 7 runs to lose it, then it's, you know, pretty squarely on the bullpen. But
well, I want to I got some numbers here on the bullpen. They're 4th in the majors in WAR, which some people don't like. I prefer FIP. They're 3rd in the majors in FIP, 2nd in the AL to the Yankees. And that's just an overall thing. And that's with Miller struggling lately and with Shaw being whatever lately and with all that. They're 1st in ERA, 3rd in FIP, 4th in WAR. They're up there in the most important stats. And I believe, I'll check this real quick. But, they're 4th from the bottom in least innings pitched. And they're within 2 innings of 2nd from the bottom. So they've thrown the least innings of all of them, with the exception of the Tigers, by a 3rd of an inning. And only the Nationals are significantly fewer. So they barely ever pitch, and yet they still are the most valuable by WAR, which is a cumulative stat. So the more innings you throw, the more WAR you get if you are a good pitcher or a good bullpen as a unit. It's not a worry to me. And every time someone says something nasty about Shaw, and I have seen some of the more recent stats that more legitimate, like his swinging strike rate and stuff like that, are more significant problems than anyone has ever said before.
They are,
but
now.
Even so, he's not. I think that's a usage issue. I think he's been used way too much over the last 4 years. But with the when you consider the bullpen as a whole, there's no question that he is not the worst member of the bullpen. So if you're going to improve the bullpen, you have to look and see, okay, if we get rid of Shaw, who do we replace him with? And the answer is probably Sean Armstrong.
Yeah.
And so now you're saying, is Shaw even the worst guy in the bullpen? Which he's not, because that's Dan Otero. And if...
Really?
Let's say...
I disagree.
Okay, well, who do you say?
I mean, I guess you have to say someone's the worst. It's probably him. I don't know. I mean, I guess Nick Goody is better. Yeah. I don't know. I've had a weird thing against Nick Goody this year, but I just looked and his FIP is 319, which is actually pretty good. I thought he was way, way outperforming his FIP, but he's, good enough.
No, I've been really impressed with Goody this year. I really like him, and I think he's a major reason why the Indians bullpen looks as good as it does statistically, because when the Indians have needed a guy for multiple innings because they were getting blown out or whatever, he's been able to come in almost every time and shut them down. A lot of teams don't have that. A lot of teams, the reason why their bullpen numbers maybe look worse than they actually are because when they need a guy to fill in those innings, it's some guy who failed as a sixth or seventh starter, and they just, got him in doing mop-up duty, and he's terrible.
I mean, he's good at his role. I mean, that's the thing. He's taken on the Jeff Manship role, and he's done well with it. He comes in from when they're down, and he, comes in, and most time he does a good job keeping the score where they're at. It's very rare they put him in a tie game or a lead unless, some guys are out or they're going extra innings or something, or the starter left early. But usually he or Otero, the first guys out of that bullpen, except for when McAllister.
Yeah. It's usually Otero because it takes Otero like pitches and he's ready to come into a game. So Francona generally likes to use him first. But I think like he is the weakest. And then the next question would be who's weaker or who's better, Armstrong or Otero. And at the moment I would go with Otero, although I do still like Armstrong.
I do, but Armstrong was supposed to have Nick Goody's role at the start of the year. And then they had some issues starting pitching and needed length, so they had to send Armstrong down to get a fresh arm up because he had options. And it was Goody, and Goody stayed ever since. So Armstrong's been
the Goody started the season all hot with that whole thing where he never he didn't allow a run in the AAA, and then they brought him up for for over a month, maybe a month and a half, he didn't allow a run in the majors.
Yeah, he started the year in AAA, and he hasn't gone back since he came up.
Well, that's what I'm saying, but he didn't give up a run in AAA.
Right.
In about a month of work, or 3 weeks of work, and then they brought him up, and then he didn't give up one in the majors for another month and a half. So it was a really impressive start, and then since then he hasn't been anywhere near as perfect, but no one expected him to be. So you can't really rip on him for that. And I think it's almost like the Indians are coasting a little bit. Which I guess
with the bullpen, you're going to coast while Miller's on the DL.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. And Shaw has pitched too many innings already this year. And I'd like to see them kind of give him a break. And with Mike Clevinger in the bullpen now, well, they're trying to give Clevinger a little bit of a break, from throwing so many innings in the rotation. So I just think it's almost like they're trying to give everybody a little bit of rest as they go on through August, because they know it's going to, it may have already caught up to them, but it's definitely going to catch up to them by the time September rolls around.
Yeah. With the lack of off days. I mean, maybe a DL stint does Shaw some good. The only thing is he's not gotten a swing and miss in three straight outings. Now he has not generated a swing and a miss. And the last strikeout he recorded, I believe, let me look here. It might have been four appearances ago. He hasn't had a strikeout. Oh, God, it's been longer. He has not struck a batter out since the last game of the San Francisco series, and that's also the game where he allowed two runs in two-thirds of an inning, and they lost.
Yeah, I would say
we're going on almost 3 weeks here where Shaw has not struck a batter out. Not that that's the end of everything. You know, Dan Otero, because he's a sinker baller, is not going to strike a lot of guys out. But Shaw's
okay, but just
rate look at is equal to Josh Tomlin's right now, and that's not a good thing for a reliever, especially one of Brian Shaw's caliber.
Look at Sunday's game, which is the day we're recording this, against New York. Carrasco was in the sixth inning, and he had the bases loaded, and I think one out. Yeah, he had the bases loaded and one out. And he gives – this play we need to talk about more in depth. But before the play even happened, Carrasco's in there. They wanted to pull him. You could tell Francona wanted to pull him, but he had Shaw up in the bullpen. You need a pitcher who's going to come in and strike somebody out. It's not Shaw, so he couldn't go to Shaw. If Miller was in the bullpen, I guarantee you they would have pulled Carrasco and brought in Miller. You need a strikeout, you go to Miller. Like, that's an easy pick, and I don't think he wanted to use Allen in the sixth inning. Maybe he should have. I mean, because he ended up using Allen anyway in what became a seven-run game. But, you know, I think maybe that would have been the move, but he didn't have Allen up and ready because he didn't know Carrasco was going to load the bases. Like, it was something that happened very quickly. And
this is what bothers me about this whole situation. This is exactly why I'm bothered by the bullpen usage. Now, I know repeatedly Francona has said that having Cody Allen allows them to use Andrew Miller the way they have, and that's fine. But in the wake of it, if you have confidence or if you're willing to bring in Zach McAllister or, you know, Brian Shaw or Nick Goody or whoever, in a tie game, or like you did, okay, let's just say McAllister or Shaw, because McAllister pitched the eighth
of a tie game. You know, and I'm also who didn't pitch Saturday, I don't believe, but he definitely didn't pitch Sunday. He's got a much higher K per nine than he's had in previous seasons. I think eventually he's going to be one of those guys Francona can bring in when he needs a guy.
And I don't understand why we didn't see that. That's a good point, too. I would have liked to have seen – I mean, bullpen usage, obviously, is the easiest – it's the lowest-hanging fruit to pick on a manager for. So – and obviously, I mean, so these should all have been taken with a grain of salt, probably. But if he's going on record saying they will attempt to use Allen – in the Miller's role in his absence when, you know, not all the time, but sometimes, so far he's had chances to do that and he's gotten cold feet over doing it. But if you are okay bringing Zach McAllister in the eighth inning of a tie game, and you're okay with bringing Brian Shaw in down three runs after an error in the sixth inning because you need someone to get a strikeout, and obviously Shaw cannot strike anybody out right now, why can't you trust them to follow Cody Allen in a clean inning? I'm not saying, you know, if technically Miller's role would be, like you said today, the sixth inning with guys on, you need
to
strike out.
Well, just to get the strikeout.
Right.
Yeah,
okay,
Miller,
so
yeah.
use Allen for that situation. Use him when you would use Miller. And if you trust other guys to go in front of Allen, you should trust them to follow Allen, and hopefully they start a clean inning. And you're not putting them into situations where they need to strike out to get out of it like Miller or Allen would, because those are two of your best strikeout guys in your bullpen. So if you trust those guys to start a clean inning, you should trust Cody Allen to pitch in front of them. That's why I don't understand why they've gone away from progressive thinking. I know, like I said, I think Allen allows them to use Miller the way they have, but – why? Okay, he brought Miller into that Boston game when things were getting out of hand and it was a crazy game. And everyone, you know, Matt Underwood was all saying, well, Tito wants to win the game. He's bringing Andrew Miller in now. So he really wanted to win that game, but you're saying he didn't really want to win these games?
Okay, I think, first thing, I don't believe anything the Indians front office or management ever says about anything. They lie constantly. They've been lying for years. And
this is true.
It makes it impossible to trust anything they say. So I don't even listen to them at this point, and you can come at me and say that Francona said that. And it is what it is. I don't believe him, so it doesn't matter. Just like that horse shit we talked about last week with Kyle Crockett. And So, like, to me, that's irrelevant. What I think is happening is Francona is a very old-school manager. He's always been old-school. And he's always been put in these positions where the front office is new school. And he's conformed. And I think his way of conforming with Miller is like, well, we already have a dominant closer. He didn't want to upset the veteran balance. You don't want to take your closer who's doing fine and pull him out and put this new guy in and then mess up the whole clubhouse chemistry and that type of thing. You don't want to mess up that. Leave out, then you can use Miller wherever you want to. It's like having two closers. It's a luxury item. It's great. So I feel like Allen, then Miller would have just become the Indians' closer, and you would have never seen him used like that. He would have just pitched the ninth inning every single time, or maybe the eighth and the ninth. But I don't think he ever would have been used in the fifth inning and sixth, like if Allen wasn't on the team. So now you take Miller out of it. I don't think they're going to go back and use Allen like that. I think Allen is your three-run, one-inning closer. I just think, like, because he is at heart an old school type manager. I've seen him manage for a pitcher win, and he's got but he's near 100 pitches, and he'll bring it in because it's a tie game, and he's hoping that the half. When it's obvious that he shouldn't have done that, and a lot of times the pitcher ends up giving it up, and it's like, no, you should have taken him out. But he's managing for that pitcher win. You can see him do it, and he definitely manages for saves and. He's old school.
But he gets all that praise last year in the postseason for going to Andrew Miller in the fifth inning against the Red Sox. And I know
that's because he couldn't be guys. I think that's enough on the bullpen. Going back to that Carrasco play, of course, you're not allowed to talk shit on any Indians players anymore. But
we can talk about that, for sure.
Not being able to talk shit on players?
Yeah, I mean...
For sure. I wouldn't... What would be the point of my website? I did it before. Like, I created the website because... Like, I always felt like, okay, I want to write about the Indians, but I don't want to write for Indians.com because what if I used to hate Eric Wedge. I despised him. I thought he did so much stupid stuff all the time. Especially personnel-wise. Like, he ran a lot of guys out of town that I liked. Or even if I didn't... Like, I didn't think Eddie Murray was that great of a coach. But a great player, and you shouldn't have ran him out of town like that. Like, that's when I was thinking about writing back then when Wedgie was around. And for, like, Indians.com or something like that... Were you because they have to? Everything's got to be positive. Everything's got to be great and sunshine and flowers all the time. And the whole point was, no, it's not. It doesn't exist. There's no thing like that. You have to be able to call things as you see. They haven't won a World Series since 1948, so obviously there are some problems somewhere. So you can talk shit on players. You can talk shit on management. You can talk shit on anyone you want to. It's fine.
I think we
feel
need
free
to stop telling people how to be fans. I mean, I'm a little guilty of this because I usually, you know, I'm not afraid to troll a fan that says something stupid. I think I'm lying. You know, if we're allowed to talk shit on the team, I think you can make fun of saying something stupid.
This particular case, very Jensen Lewis-esque. In that you didn't play the game because Almonte missed a catch in right field that he really should have caught. And Baseball Savant had it at a 76% chance of being an out. So, yes, it's not caught every single time, but it's caught most of the time. And he was right there. and he didn't even get a glove on it. And he looked like – I think the sun did get in his eyes at the last second, but he looked like he was scared of running into the wall and off and didn't even touch it, so they called it a triple. I personally think it should have been an error.
Yeah, well, the error
unless you should catch too. The ball. So the point is, argument that if you're not used to play the game, first thing, if you're saying that, the guys who never played professionally, the in-game commentators a lot of times did, but the guys who do Baseball Tonight and, you know, there's a spattering of guys who used to play, but most of them didn't. And most of the guys writing the books today and running the front offices, like, would you go up to Chris Antonetti and go, hey, you can't judge a player because you never played Major League Baseball? You go up to Mike Chernoff. The Indians don't have a former major leaguer in their entire front office that actually has a job of importance.
Not publicly, yeah.
Would you go up to those guys and be like, you never played Major League Baseball. You aren't fit to judge which player is better than which other player. Like, it makes no sense at all. Obviously, that's their job, is to compare players and decide which one is worth being on the roster and which one isn't, and which players they should trade for and which players they should promote. All that stuff is done by people who never played professional baseball. So, I'm going to go with thousands, many thousands of baseball games in my life at every single level, from T-ball, celebrity softball. I think that's the spectrum. And I mean, I feel like I know when a catch to be made or not at this point. If that play had happened in a rookie ball game, I wouldn't err because it's a rookie ball. But at the major league level, I've seen so many major league plays made where guys made that catch. I feel like he should have made the catch.
He should have.
And you have to be able. And you have to be able to come out and say, "I feel like he should have made the catch." Is there a solution to Amonte playing right field? Not necessarily. Austin Jackson can't play every day because he's too old, because he's 32.
Thank you. Or whatever. Hurt, yeah.
Whatever it is. I'm too old. I'm 31, so I'm way too old. But Austin Jackson can't play every day, and Amonte can, like, he's physically capable of it. And Chisenhall's still hurt, and I haven't heard anything. I don't know that he's even considering doing a rehab assignment. Yeah, initially they said he was like 3 days behind Kipnis, but Kipnis is already
back, and we haven't seen anything.
Kipnis was ready to come back last Friday, and they didn't bring him back because they had two lefties coming with New York, so they wanted to save him until Sunday because they knew they weren't going to use him, which is fine, whatever, you know, so. Whatever, he's back now. He's went through his full rehab thing, and Chisenhall still hasn't even started. Not that Chisenhall is a master in right field, but I feel like he would have caught that as well.
I mean, it's also important to remember that Almonte's put up, if you, you know, depending on how much you trust defensive metrics, even a little bit, most of them say that Almonte's played a good right field over the last 2 years.
But I'll tell you, he's had at least two or three bonehead plays where they've just been terrible. It's like if he misses it, it's a really bad miss. He's usually pretty good. But if he misses it, it's bad.
It was bad. And that's the thing. It was bad.
Kind of like Guyer. I mean, Guyer is usually princip balls in and out of his glove, and of course I hadn't seen a replay of it. I saw it live in stadium, and I hadn't watched a replay of it, and somebody posted it today, and it looked just as bad as it did live. I mean, the ball's in his glove and out of his glove. I mean, so, but usually Guyer is a really solid outfielder.
He is, except for that one in San Francisco.
So Almonte's made a couple mistakes that I can recall. And Guyer's made a couple. Everyone's going to make a couple of mistakes, but you still have to be able to call these guys on it. Oh, I don't see a roster move mistake. And some people still hate Almonte because of the PED suspension, which right. I think is nuts.
It is.
My personal opinion on all that is, first thing, I think they should just allow them. I mean, if you could do them and not get sick from it, you should be able to do it. I mean, the whole reason why they banned them wasn't a – it's not because they make it makes baseball players better, because lifting weights makes baseball players better, and training and practicing makes baseball players better, and they don't ban those things. So it's not like it's cheating because it's making baseball players better. It's cheating because it's a risk that most of them don't want to take, and if some of them will take this risk that maybe could kill them, which it has killed people in the past, depending on which ones you use. You know, if you're going to take this risk and somebody else isn't willing to take the risk, then that's cheating. It's kind of like the whole blocking the plate rule. The reason why they made that a rule wasn't to protect the base runner. It was to protect the catcher, because catchers felt like they had to put 1 foot behind the base even when the ball was coming from the right field side, and it would stretch across and they'd get their ACLs ripped and UCLs or whatever, or ACL and MCLs. They just tear them all in half, and it was all disgusting ways they shouldn't bend. And so some catchers were willing to do this and take that risk of getting hurt, which to me is exactly the same as taking a risk of doing steroids. It's maybe the steroid one is more severe if you, depending on what you take, but it's pretty much exactly the same. It gives your player a competitive advantage with a risk. And so Major League Baseball said, we don't want you taking that risk, so you can't block the plate at all anymore, unless you have the ball, because then it's not a risk. You're not putting your leg out in the middle of nowhere. Because if it was about protecting the base runner, you wouldn't be able to block the plate even if you had the ball. But you're allowed to if you catch it first. So I think if there are safe steroids, and there are safe steroids, I take them. One of them is cortisone. Cortisone is a steroid. It's a legal steroid by MLB. Guys take it all the time. It's a steroid. So that's why they changed it to performance-enhancing drugs, because it's not a performance-enhancing steroid, but it's still a steroid. So I think there are things that they can take that are safe and illegal. Illegal in the country, but illegal in baseball. That would save things. And I don't know about stenozolol in particular, what Amante got busted for. But I don't care. I also think that once you do your time in anything, you should be forgiven, and let's move on with life.
Sure, that's I'm more agreeing with that. I'm not sure I'm on the same page with you steroid-wise, but definitely with the suspension thing. Either way, the point is Amante should have made that play, and people were ripping Carrasco saying that, well, he shouldn't have put the runners on in the first place. That's fine. But he made the pitch that should have been an out. So,
but I feel like, but no, it shouldn't have been an out. He crushed that ball. It was a bad pitch, and he smoked it to right field. So I think they were both equally to blame.
It had a hit probability of like 11%.
Well, we already went over this. It was 24%.
Okay, well, either way. It's a hit. It's not a hit as often as
I believe. You know, I think that's the point. That's why we like advanced stats, because that play doesn't even account into FIP. It's not even taken into consideration of FIP.
But sure, it's Carrasco's ERA.
Yeah, who cares?
True.
Anyone's ERA. You care about winning baseball games, and happened in the past, not what's going to happen in the future.
And also, I think it's really ridiculous. Like you said, people are coming back out of the – or were freaking out about two losses in Boston, and they beat the Yankees 2 in a row, and everything was good again. And now they've lost 2 in a row in New York, and all of a sudden I saw a couple tweets today saying, well, the Indians can't beat good teams. They're just not good against them. You know, it's such a recency bias. Like, they scored 2 runs in the last 2 days. The Yankees scored 5 runs in the first 3 games, and they won one of them. We scored 2 runs in 2 games and lost 2, but they also aren't taking into account the 5-1 record against Houston, who, because they're not the Yankees, everyone forgets about. But everyone's just a prisoner of the moment. You know, you lose a game, and all of a sudden, the world's coming to an end. And it's
Yeah, and I swear everywhere I see people scoreboard watching now, which if it was a different season, if the situation was different, I might be as well. In past seasons, I think August 1st is probably when I started doing it. And I had said this on another podcast before. The first few years we were doing Burning River Baseball, I think no, 2013 was the first year we started. We started Burning River in 2011, but 2013, I created this gigantic chart of every single. It was the Indians' schedule, their winning percentage and the opponent's winning percentage, and how many games they were expected to win, and how many I thought they needed to win. And then I did the same exact thing for every other team that was contending for the same playoff spot. And I updated that thing every single day and look like, okay, they needed to win this game and they didn't need to win that game. Like I did that year, and I did it in 2014 and 2015, and I didn't do it in 2016. 2016 was the first year I didn't do that because I was so confident that they had it wrapped up. I was like, I don't need to mess around with this. And I feel the same way this year. I don't need to do that. I don't need to look at what games they need to win and what games they don't need to win. Because they're in such a good position already, and because they're like a 91% chance to make the postseason. It might even be higher than that. It might be 91 to win the Central.
It is, yeah.
It's crazy high right now. And really, more than worrying about games against New York and Boston, of course they're going to play Colorado and Tampa next week. More than worried about those games, they have 9 games left for Kansas City, or 10 games left. 3 series, 10 games. They're 3 games up or whatever, 3.5, 2.5, something like that. I'm not sure what Kansas. Oh, Kansas City had a doubleheader on Sunday.
I
First
split.
game, they split them. Okay,
Yeah.
so it's probably 3 games back.
It's three, yeah. Or no, I'm sorry. I think
Yeah. So,
it's two and a half, I think.
okay, 2.5, whatever. It doesn't matter. The whole point is, 10 games against one team. If Kansas City wins all of those, it doesn't matter if it was five. They would surpass the Indians. If the Indians win half of them, though, then they stay in the lead. So those are the games that are really pivotal at this point. Are those 10 games with Kansas City as far as actually making the playoffs?
The only reason I'm even looking at the scoreboard right now is for Miller being out. When Miller comes back and if he's fine, I'll stop looking. I'm only looking for the 10-day, hopefully it's just 10 days he's out. Just because I know games like, I mean, even if I don't agree with bullpen usage, games like Saturday were going to happen where the bullpen might give up a few games where they should have won. I'm not saying Saturday is one of them because they only scored one run. But there might be some, I'm not today end of it either because the one run as well. But I'm just looking out in case there is a game where the bullpen is a bigger issue than it's been since Miller's been out. So as soon as Miller's back, if he's proven he's, back to being Andrew Miller, I'll stop scoreboard watching then because I'm not really concerned. My only concern right now is in short term.
Yeah, I'm not even gonna, like I said, I'm not even gonna start. It's just, I mean, I'm aware of what's happening. I'm aware of about where they are, in the division where everyone else is. It's just, I'm not gonna watch a Royals game on TV or keep flipping back and forth between it on game day, even. I got other more important things to do than that. The last thing I wanted to talk about before we wrapped up was that Kipnis is back, and we talked about it yesterday on Twitter. It'll be Saturday if you want to look up our conversations. I think you were involved in it. I was talking with some other people as well. And the basic topic was who should get sent down for Kipnis? And of course, some people said Almonte even then, which is probably going to happen when Chisenhall comes back, assuming Chisenhall comes back. That Almonte will get sent down. But he wasn't for Kipnis. And the question, there was no question that Urshela is more valuable to the Indians than Gonzalez because he's so good defensively at third base that he actually like has value there, where neither of them have offensive value at all. And I'll say this again every week, I have to bring this back up again, that the first day he hit that home run and everyone goes crazy over it, and I'm like, no, he's a utility infielder, and now everybody realizes he's a utility infielder. I was like, yes, because it's not like we just started watching him when he made his major league debut. We've been watching him for years. That's what we do. We watch these guys for years before they come to the majors. So maybe listen to us a little bit. Like, maybe, you know, all those thousands of games I've watched. Maybe pay attention a little bit. Thousands of games. I just saw my first Indians no hitter the other day. It was really exciting. But that's the only Indians affiliate I've ever seen from rookie ball to the majors ever throw no hitter.
I've seen a couple of captains.
You've seen one of the captains? Is that what you said?
What's that? I didn't hear you. You're cut off.
You said you saw one with the captains?
I have.
Who pitched
it? It was a combined no-hitter as well.
Well, do you remember any of the guys?
I think Michael. I'm going to look it up now because I think I've only seen one, so I know which one it is. None of them ever made the majors.
Okay, well, I can tell you who the four guys were that pitched this one. Dylan Baker pitched the first inning. Dace Keim pitched the second inning. Tanaj Thomas pitched the next three, and then Maker Manzanillo pitched the last four. Anyway, back to Ursella. Just like, I mean, Gonzalez is a utility infielder, and we knew that. So equivalent offensive output, then you keep the guy who's better defensively. But the question that kept coming up is, well, Ursella can't play shortstop. So and he can't play second base, or he hasn't played for shortstop and second at the major league level. So what do you do if Kipnis needs a day off, or Lindor needs a day off, or somebody on the infield gets hurt? How do you fill that spot without Gonzalez? And my answer on Saturday was you put Ursula at third, and you put Ramirez literally anywhere else on the field that anybody got hurt. It doesn't matter. He can play left field, center field. He can play first base if he has to. Pick a spot, put him there. He'll be fine. Like, that's – and you don't – and some people I've seen, they get, like, mad about calling Ramirez a utility infielder. He's not a utility infielder, because utility infielder is a guy who plays once a week or twice a week. He is a starter. That's his designation. He's a starting infielder. What doesn't matter what position he's playing, he's a starting infielder. So you can use Ursula as a utility infielder to play him at third and then put these other guys. But, of course, Ursula did play some shortstop in AAA this year, and today he played shortstop in the major leagues. I don't believe he fielded a ball. But I think the idea was, if, let's say, something happens where they need – multiple positions covered, can he play shortstop if he has to? I think that was the goal to find out, and they didn't really find out because he didn't really play there. But I do think he could, in a pinch, just like Lonnie Chisenhall has played first base a few times. If you need some place. I mean, years ago, they had said, what happens if both catchers go down and Mike Avilas, Ryan Rayburn, no, it wasn't Rayburn. It was Mike Avilas was the next option. Like, if we absolutely need another catcher, we got Mike Avilas, we'll throw him back there. I think that's kind of what they're looking at with this Ursula shortstop issue. Need him because crazy stuff happens. Can he play shortstop? Yes, he can. He can play. I'm sure he can too in an emergency situation.
I'm okay with them keeping him for that reason, exactly.
And my only other thing on Ursula in particular, and on Gonzalez, I don't feel like either of them have a long-term future in Cleveland. I said it today on Twitter. I think Eric Stametz is as good a defender at shortstop. Ursula is third, or very close to being as good. And he's a better defender than... And he's a better hitter than either of them. And Stametz has played mostly second and third base this year, because when he was in Akron, Yu-Chang Chang was playing short. So he was playing – I can't remember now if he was playing second or third there. And then when they moved him up to AAA, he played the other one, second or third. So he's played a lot of second, third, and short. I think Stametz very well could be the utility man of the future. I don't think he's a starter. But I think he could be more of their super utility guy coming up in the future. I'd like to see them trade Ursula to some team that would use him as a starter. There might not be many, but I think there's a couple teams out there that would use him as a starter at third base, and I'd like to see that happen. It's never happened in Cleveland.
I think there's plenty of teams out there that would, you know, like the Indians did with Jack Hanahan while Chisenhall was coming up. They would use Urshela in the same role. The only issue is I don't know how much Urshela is going to hit, but I at least for 2017, I hope, obviously in September, Gonzalez will be back, and maybe Gonzalez will be back before then. We don't know.
Well, I mean, September, I'd like to see Richie Schaefer. I think that would be an interesting thing, just to see a guy who can play third base and can actually hit. But I don't see him as much of a future either. But I think, you know, for this year, I'd like to see Ursula stay for the entire season. I don't want to see him go down again.
I agree. I want both Gonzalez and I want Urshela on the playoff roster. I think it's a given Gonzalez is probably going to be in the playoff roster because of his he's got more positional flexibility than Urshela. And then I think we know that even if you know, what you just said makes a lot of sense where Jose can still be the utility guy while starting and Urshela can play third base and let Jose cover wherever. But you know that, like you said, Francona is still a traditional manager. And when it comes time to the playoff roster, Gonzalez is going to be on it because he can play second, short, and third, and first and outfield. Whether it makes sense or not.
I'm still going to disagree with that because I think in the playoffs more than ever, you want to maximize every single position, and it'd be more valuable to have that extra defender in there in Ursula who could – I mean, if you got a lead, when you're bringing in Miller, you're bringing in Ursula too. Like, to me, that's how I would run that.
I was going to say the same exact thing. I think that's why I want to see both of them in there because I think – when you get to the sixth inning with a lead, you can get Urshela in there and move Ramirez to second base, and you don't lose anything offensively moving to second base. You're just – it's potentially a step down from Kipnis offensively. That's if he ever gets it going, because if he doesn't, then Urshela is just as good offensively because
– I will say on the Indians lineup, it's set 1 through 9. It's not like there's places where you could – you know, take somebody out and replace them with someone from AAA or, you know, a waiver pick or something like that. You're not going to replace anyone 1 through 9 generally. And because of that, because they're all pretty set in stone, there's very few pitch hitting opportunities. However, the one that pops up every single day is a catcher because neither of the catchers are hitting where they once did and where they probably should be. So my argument against having both Ursula and Gonzalez is that you want to have somebody on the bench who can hit to pinch hit for one of those catchers at some point. Like that's – and maybe that's because they have so many outfielders, maybe then it comes from one of the outfielders. But I don't know that Austin Jackson's the answer there either.
Do you really feel more comfortable – you know, the reasoning they have Almonte right now is to potentially pinch hit. Do you feel better about Almonte pinch hitting in a playoff spot than you would about Eric Gonzalez? I don't think Urshela should pinch hit, but I think Gonzalez is a little more upside.
No, I don't think either of them should. I don't think any of those three guys. I mean, like I said, I think Almonte's gone as soon as Chisenhall gets back.
Well, at any given time in the playoffs, one of Jackson or Zimmer will be on the bench, or Guyer, or Chisenhall. One of those four guys will be on the bench at some point if you need hit. And even if it's against the right-hander, you'd still rather see Guyer than Roberto Perez or maybe Yan Gomes. You know, if you really, really, really need a hit, your chances are better with Guyer. Because at least he might get hit by a pitch.
Yeah, so I think, in wrapping this up, I think the entire theme of this entire episode has been it's all Lonnie Chisenhall's fault. Right,
that sounds about right. We're all going back to
his fault. Fence, and now Monte be out there. It's everything is Chisenhall's fault, and we all blame him, and we're allowed to blame him.
You are allowed to complain about anything you want, but you didn't play well.
That's what I'm saying. He should have been out there playing with his bad back or whatever he has wrong with him. I don't even remember.
Yeah. What if we applied that to other things in life? If you complain about your power going out, you don't work on power lines. Can you complain about that because you don't work on power lines? So why are you allowed to complain about your power being out?
Yeah, and the converse or the inverse, I guess, is that Jensen Lewis shouldn't be able to talk about anything except baseball ever in his whole life.
Oh God. I might be okay with that.
Yeah, no, baseball players who played baseball professionally can't talk about politics or anything else. They can't talk about food. Like, if they went out to eat and it wasn't good, they can't talk about it because they never worked in a restaurant.
You're not a chef. What do you know about good food?
It simplifies things, though, right?
It does. That's my argument. I'm sticking to it.
That's why I'm a jack of all trades.
Complain about your industry that you work in.
I do a little bit of everything so I can talk about everything.
You're allowed to complain.
Ah, damn, I never rode a dragon.
Everyone needs to stop. Just, you're allowed to complain. You're allowed to be a stupid fan, even if your opinions are shitty. And you ignore facts, which a lot of fans ignore facts, but whatever.
Yeah, and that's like, people talk shit on Twitter sometimes too, and talk about how it's going down or whatever. It's taken over by whoever or whatever. Twitter is like freedom of speech incarnate. It's beautiful. I love it. I mean, I guess sometimes they do go crazy and block people. Like Twitter will kick people off, but usually it's for legitimate harassment reasons.
Mm-hmm.
We've even dealt with some of that stuff within the site of people getting harassed and stealing identities and things like that. But in general, the conversations that go there are real. And I mean, I've thought about it. Other sites will have like a game log type of thing on the site. So during the game, people can chat in kind of like a forum fashion. But Twitter is so much better than anything that could ever exist like that. So I'd just rather be on there. Like, because on Twitter, you don't have to go to the website. You don't have to go to somebody in specific's website to talk to them, and maybe 5-10 people are on there talking or whatever. Thousands of people talking about. It doesn't matter how many people talking about it at that same time. So I think it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. I hope it never dies.
I agree.
And it's way better than Facebook, because if you type that somebody had 69 strikeouts, everyone will respond nice. And if you type it on Facebook, you'll get something completely different. That's what I've heard.
Those are likes and no comments.
Well, yeah, I've seen things where people posted something like that on Facebook and everybody actually commented on the actual thing. And then they showed the comments on Twitter and every single comment was nice.
I think that's
really important.
That's enough for this week.
It's an important fraternity for us to have on the tweeters. We'll be back with you guys next week. Have a great night.